king into waging war on Eberron. That would be disastrous for us. Both countries could end up destroyed, but maybe that's what Lord Morris wants. When a country is in ruins, it's easier to take over. Silas recalled the dragon his brother had talked about. The ancient one, Fafnir. The dragon also wanted war. Was there some connection here? We could arrest Romac and the priest, Dimitri suggested. If we interrogate them, they'll tell us what they're up to. Silas thought it over as he ate. Let's leave them be for now so we can see what they do next. When Alexei returns, have him follow the priest. You keep an eye on Romac. I need to visit the sacred well. Dimitri blinked in surprise. Why? There's nothing there but a spring of boiling water. That's what I need to check. Silas gulped down the last of his cider. Either his brother was right and there was an old dragon lurking in the cave, or Dimitri was right and there was only a spring. Silas banged his empty cup on the table. If there was no dragon there, he would have to admit that his brother was completely delusional. She'd slept with a man. Fëanor lay in bed for a few minutes, digesting that thought. General Gorgeous had slept with her, wearing nothing but his underpants, and she'd seen his bare chest, his broad shoulders, his battle scars, and the dragon tattoo on his shoulder. When he'd leaned over her and touched her cheek, a part of her had wished they wouldn't be interrupted. With a sigh, she rolled over. What foolish thinking. He'd only behaved like that because he'd known the maid was coming in. It was nothing but pretense to him. Or was it more? There had been that moment when they had looked at each other and time had frozen while the air between them had heated with desire. Dear goddesses, the man tempted her. She sat up and glanced at the pillow he had used. There was still a slight indentation where his head had rested through the night. She reached out to touch it, then jerked her hand back. Stop thinking about him. There was work to do. She needed to gather up samples of any poisonous and medicinal plants she could find in the castle garden. She headed to her dressing room and shoved a chair against Silas's door. After relieving herself, she filled a bowl with water and rolled up her sleeves to wash her face. To her surprise, there was a pink, inflamed area on the underside of her left forearm. Had the fancy gown she'd worn last night irritated her skin? She washed her face, then the pink area on her arm. With her hands still wet, she reached for her toothbrush, and it slipped from her grip and tumbled into the water. Of all the silly... She grabbed the toothbrush, then dropped it again with a gasp. The silver handle had turned black. Her skin chilled as she gazed once again at the pink spot on her arm. A side effect of the seeds of the darker flower. Someone was trying to poison her. Chapter 15. Don't panic. Fëanor gripped the edge of her dressing table and took a deep breath. She needed to remain calm and act like the healer that she was. First, she should take a reading on herself. She gripped her left wrist, and instantly her gift was activated. Pulse was fast, but that was probably due to shock. Don't panic. She mentally searched her body for signs of poison. It was mostly concentrated around the inflamed area on her arm. Thankfully, she'd received a small dose. She could expect some dizziness and perhaps some nausea. But as long as she wasn't exposed again, she should be all right. Just to be sure, she quickly stripped and examined herself for any other signs of inflammation. None. Thank the goddesses. The next step was discovering what had transferred the poison to her arm, so she could avoid coming into contact with it again. The pink area hadn't been there before dinner last night. So the most likely culprits were the gown she'd worn or the nightgown she'd worn to bed. But why would someone treat only the left sleeve with poison? Had something else touched her forearm? The knife. She'd slipped the dagger from Lord Romac up her sleeve. She ran into her bedchamber and opened the drawer of her bedside table. Using a handkerchief, she picked up the dagger and returned it to the dressing room. After emptying the bowl and rinsing it out, she filled it part way with fresh water, then slipped the dagger into the water. While she waited, she put on a clean shift. After a few tense minutes, she dunked the silver handle of her hairbrush into the water. It turned black. She dropped the hairbrush on the table as a startling thought occurred to her. The toxic effect of darker poison was slow when absorbed through the skin. But if the knife had pierced her flesh, the poison would have instantly entered her bloodstream. It could have killed her. Don't panic. She inhaled slowly. So Lord Romac wanted her dead. No, wait. He had wanted her to use the dagger on Silas. He wanted Silas dead, and he wanted her to take the blame for it. Even the smallest of nicks could have killed Silas. Her heart clenched at the thought of accidentally killing him, and she leaned over, pressing a hand to her chest. Calm yourself. Romac's plan would have never worked, for she could never attack Silas. Not when she was falling for him. With a groan, she covered her mouth. It was true. Her initial attraction to him had grown to the point that she was falling for him. And it was impossible. No one would accept her here. She was considered an enemy from Woodwin, a malicious elf who could stab her lover to death. And if anything happened to Silas, they would hold her responsible. She would end up in a dungeon, or executed. Romac could be rid of both her and Silas in one fell swoop. And with Silas gone, there was no heir to the throne. Was Romac planning to steal the crown? She had to tell Silas about this immediately. Even though the cave of the sacred well was considered a holy place, Silas had never considered it a pleasant place to visit. As he approached, the smell of rotten eggs forced him to breathe through his mouth. He also had to watch his step, or he could get seriously burned. The stream that emerged from the cave was so hot that nothing could live in it or around it. The banks were white ash, and hot enough to sting through the soles of his boots. Any rocks that had fallen from the mountainside into the stream were blanched white like hard-boiled eggs. Farther down the valley, where the stream was cooled off by snowmelt, the water gathered in a series of pools. It was believed that bathing in those pools could heal certain diseases, but as far as Silas knew, they hadn't helped the queen. They certainly hadn't helped his mother. The entrance to the cave was narrow and dark. His vision adjusted quickly as he maneuvered down the tunnel, avoiding the white ash close to the stream. If he slipped here and fell into the water, he would be cooked. After a few yards, the entrance opened into a huge cavern, big enough for more than a dozen dragons. The source of the stream, the sacred well, was situated in the center of the room. Wisps of steam rose from its clear blue depths, the water in it fed by an underground spring. Too hot for humans, but not for dragons. Giant pillar candles were set onto boulders, held in place by pools of melted wax. Rivulets of wax had run off the edges of the boulders, only to cool and harden into stalactites that reached for the stone floor of the underground room. Once a week, a caretaker ventured inside the cave to light the candles, but only a few remained lit now. The other flames had probably been extinguished by the breeze that wafted in from the large gap in the ceiling overhead. It was through that opening that the Ancient Ones had flown down into the cavern. The old dragons had felt safe congregating here. Any human that tried to enter through the gap in the ceiling would fall into the sacred well and be boiled to death. The other entrance, the one Silas had just used, was easily guarded, since it was narrow enough that humans were forced to enter in single file. That made it easy for the dragons to roast an unwanted intruder with a breath of fire. But the Ancient Ones had been killed off 500 years ago, in the Great War of the Dragons. The new dragons had quickly declared themselves the new guardians of the sacred well, and the place had been opened to all the Nevesky. Now the site was considered a holy place to pray, for any human who was brave enough to risk the danger of coming here would supposedly be rewarded by having his request granted. Had Petrus come here often to pray? And in his desperation, he must have considered Fafnir the answer to his prayers. Silas lit a torch and wandered about the cavern, examining all the nooks and crannies. No sign of a dragon. But there were 7 tunnels that branched off from the main cavern. The dragon could be hiding down one of those tunnels and only showing himself to Petrus. Silas ventured down the first tunnel. Dead end. Same with the second and third. The fourth tunnel led to a small room. Just as Silas stepped inside, a large rat scampered past him, dashing for the main cavern. Toward the far side of the room, Silas found the doused remains of a campfire, and nearby some discarded bones. Odd. A dragon didn't need to cook his meals over a fire. He could simply breathe fire on an animal, then gobble it down. Silas examined the room more carefully and discovered a narrow opening into a sheltered alcove. Inside there were blankets. A man's clothing. But no man in sight. He checked the other tunnels but found nothing. It didn't look like an ancient one was living here. But possibly a homeless man was. Who was Petrus meeting? If Fafnir was real, he must have flown away when Silas had approached the cave. But he hadn't seen a dragon in the sky. He groaned. Whatever was going on here stank as badly as the sacred well. Gwenor whispered a prayer of thanks to the goddesses when she discovered a verna plant in the castle garden. She pulled off several leaves, still damp from morning dew, and pressed them against the inflamed area on her arm. Within seconds, the itching and burning subsided. She hadn't mentioned the poisoning to Nyssa when she'd asked the maid to help her dress, for she hadn't wanted the news to spread around the castle. But as soon as she was dressed, she'd dashed to Lady Margosha's bedchamber to tell her. Margosha had quickly agreed that the situation had to remain a secret. Lord Romac couldn't know that they knew what he had done, or he might try to flee. So they had agreed to go about their day as normally as possible. Margosha had provided Gwenor a canvas bag and a pair of shears for working in the garden. While Gwenor had hurried down the stairs, Margosha had gone to find Silas. Now, in the garden, Gwenor stuffed more verna leaves into her bag in case she needed them later. Then she clipped off samples from other plants. Some could be used to make poison, others medicine, and some could actually do both, depending on how potent a concoction was made. As she worked, she kept glancing toward the southern gate, hoping to see Silas. Had Margosha told him the news yet? If he cared about her, wouldn't he come running to make sure she was all right? Her gaze drifted to the green lawn where she and Eviana had been dropped that first day. Only 2 days ago. So much had happened since then. It felt like she'd known Silas for 2 months instead of 2 days. And what had happened to Puff? She glanced up at the sky. No dragon in sight. When would she see him again? When would she hear his beautiful voice in her mind? It had a soothing quality that she would welcome right now when her head was beginning to hurt. An effect from the poison, she thought as she glanced once again at the southern gate. Where was Silas? His voice was soothing too when he lowered it and spoke softly. Goodness, she'd forgotten how similar their voices were. But now that she thought about it, it seemed odd. Even their word choices were similar. A wave of dizziness caught her off guard and caused her to stumble. There was a bench nearby, so she took a seat and breathed deeply until she felt steady once again. Movement at the southern gate caught her attention. Silas? No, it was Margosha. A pang of disappointment reverberated deep in her chest. How annoying, she chided herself as the pain in her head increased. She shouldn't have fallen for that scoundrel so quickly, especially when he kept hiding things from her. But he made her pulse race when he looked at her. He made her breathless when he touched her or spoke softly to her. He made her heart melt when he did sweet things like giving Eviana a birthday cake. He made her laugh when he was outrageous. He made her heart sing when he defended her in front of others. He made her want more. How could you not fall for such a man? Are you all right? Margosha asked as she sat next to Gwenor. I was dizzy for a moment and my head hurts. Did you talk to Silas? No, but I told Dimitri everything. He said Silas has gone somewhere, but he wouldn't say where. Gwenor heaved a sigh. I hate it when they keep secrets. Me too. With a frown, Margosha crossed her arms. They should trust me. Gwenor winced. I'm sure they do. The problem is they know you're going to tell me and they don't trust me. Margosha gave her a sad smile. They will, in time. Dimitri had the knife hidden up his sleeve. Does he have an inflamed area too? Is he suffering at all? He said he was fine, Margosha snorted. But then he's a soldier. His guts could be falling out and he'd say it was just a flesh wound. Men, Gwenor muttered. Exactly, Margosha nodded. I told him to come with me so you could treat him, but he refused. He's busy keeping an eye on Romac to make sure the weasel doesn't escape. Why doesn't he arrest him? He wants to, but he's waiting for Silas to give the order. Where had Silas gone? Gwenor wondered as she pulled a few Verna leaves from her canvas sack. Can you give these to Dimitri? Just tell him to press the leaves against the inflamed area. All right, Margosha stood. You're not done here. I still have that area over there to check. Gwenor motioned to a shaded area close to the forest. I'll be along soon. Very well. I'll see you at the midday meal. Margosha headed for the southern gate. Gwenor rested a while longer on the bench. Even with her head hurting, she was enjoying the view. And the sounds of the garden. A red cardinal was flitting about, and the trill of birdsong drifted toward her. In the distance, she detected the buzzing of bees around the flowering fruit trees, pink and white flowers. A breeze blew a few petals across the garden and deposited them on the green lawn. Such a beautiful country. And yet the people were suffering from a so-called curse. A stronger breeze unleashed more cherry blossoms, and she smiled at the pink petals swirling in the sky. A murmur of voices caught her attention, and she closed her eyes to concentrate. Soft voices, speaking in a language much like Elfish. The kings of the forest. Were they in this area, too? Since she was alone at the moment, she figured it was safe enough to drop the shield around her mind. That way the giant redwoods would be able to hear her call out to them mentally. Kings of the forest, can you hear me? It is the elfin woman. We have heard of you. The kings in the south told you about me? Gwenor asked, as she rose to her feet. Yes, the news has spread north with the wind. Where are you? Gwenor asked. I'd like to meet you. Go along the Norva River. Past the waterfall. We are by the lake. Gwenor hesitated, reluctant to venture off on her own. But she knew the lake wasn't far, and as long as she could see the towers of the castle, she couldn't actually get lost. She remembered from her travels the day before that the path down to the village of Dreshka went in a southerly direction. So she should take the other path, the one that circled around the eastern side of the castle, headed north. When Puff had left her in the garden, he'd flown off that direction. If she followed the path, would she find him and the kings of the forest? She was too curious not to try it. So she hitched the canvas bag over her shoulder and headed for the path. After circling the castle, she noticed that the path split. One branch leading to a dead end at the northwestern tower, and the other widening into a road that led into the forest. As she wandered down the road, the sound of rushing water grew stronger. She had to be close to the river. She gazed into the forest, searching for giant trees. The pines and firs were tall but slender. Are you close to the castle? She asked the kings of the forest. Not far. Why are you in the land of the barbarians? I'm a healer, Gwenor explained. I'm trying to discover what is causing the health problems here. You mean the curse? You know about that? Gwenor asked. There is little we do not know. Would you be willing to tell me about it? Gwenor asked. I would really appreciate your help. There was a pause. Then she heard multiple voices whispering to one another. They seemed to be arguing. Some were objecting to helping the barbarians who had no respect for them. Gwenor was wondering if she should join the argument when suddenly she discovered a large clearing to the left. A field had been cleared of trees, and situated close by was a log cabin with a grass roof. No smoke drifted from its stone chimney. "Good morning," Gwenor called out, but no one emerged from the small house. "Hello?" She stepped up onto the front porch and peeked inside a window. No one inside, but there was a table and chairs. Boots on the floor. Piles of clothing on the table. A gust of wind caused the door to creak open. She peeked inside. No bed. No cooking utensils. Apparently no one lived here. The clothing on the table seemed familiar, so she ventured inside for a closer look. Brown breeches, some made of leather, some of linen. Green linen shirts. White linen underpants and woolen socks. Leather breastplates. Green hooded capes. These were uniforms worn by soldiers. What on earthlan were they doing here? She picked up one breastplate and noticed the two brass stars. Could it belong to Alexei? But then there was probably more than one captain in the army. Another breastplate had three stars. A colonel like Dmitri would wear this. Her breath caught when she spotted a breastplate with four stars. This had to belong to Silas. She ran her fingers over the stars. They needed polishing, for the star on the left had turned green. Why was he keeping a stash of clothing out here in a cabin? A sudden creak made her jump, but it was just the wind pushing the door further open. She adjusted her canvas sack on her shoulder, then left, closing the door behind her. She glanced back at Draven Castle. It was a quick walk from here. Since Silas, Dmitri, and Alexei all had rooms at the castle, why did they have clothes out here? It was strange, she thought, but her head hurt too much to dwell on it. As she wandered down the road, she was soon surrounded again by forest. The sound of rushing water grew increasingly loud. The road narrowed into a path that led her straight to the Norva River. Holding onto a tree, she gazed down into the ravine and spotted the river below, crashing and foaming around numerous boulders. So beautiful. She would really miss the place when she returned to the palace at Epton. Eberron was a pretty country with its green rolling hills, but not nearly as stunning as Norveshka. The sound of roaring water became louder as she walked around a bend. She stopped with a gasp. The waterfall. The water spilled over a cliff to crash into the ravine far below. She stood still for a moment, letting the beauty of the scene soothe her soul. Mist dampened her skin, and a cool breeze kissed her face. Her headache faded away. She loved it here. The thought struck her unexpectedly, but she realized it was true. Somehow she felt at home here in the mountains and forest, as if she belonged here. Perhaps it was her elfin blood, for she'd always heard that Woodwin had vast forests and mountains, too. On the other side of the waterfall, a lake stretched out before her, its colour a lovely shade of turquoise. A green field of wildflowers surrounded it, and in the distance, she gasped. The trees were enormous. The kings of the forest had not been boasting. They really were taller than a castle. She strode toward the grove of giant redwoods. I'm here.
We know.
Welcome. She rested a hand against the trunk of one.
You're amazing. I never knew something as wondrous as you existed. We know. We have decided to help you with your quest, but you must do something for us.
What? Gwenor asked.
You must tell the barbarians who we are.
We have been here longer than they have.
Storms cannot hurt us. Earthquakes cannot uproot us. Fire can only scorch us.
Then you are indestructible? Gwenor asked.
The barbarians can kill us with their axes and saws. They know not what they do. They must stop. I will tell them, Gwinnor promised. I'll tell General Dravenko. He already knows about you. What can you... She paused when she heard a cry in the distance. What is that? One of the wild barbarians has fallen into the stream. Just north of the lake. Gwinnor strode toward the northern end of the lake, where a stream fed into it. Another howl of pain sounded in the distance. I'm on my way! She called out in Norveshki as she hurried along the eastern bank of the stream. On this side, the ground was level with the water, but on the opposite side, a high ridge bordered the stream. Perhaps the man had fallen off the ridge and onto the rocks in the stream. She spotted him, hunched up on a flat boulder in the middle of the stream, holding his leg. Blood seeped from a gash to color the boulder red. I'm coming, she yelled, but he ducked his head down and looked away. He seemed short, only a boy. It will be all right. She waded into the shallow stream, wincing at how frigid the water was. I'm a healer. My name is Gwinnor. And your name? He shook his head, his thick mane of hair concealing his face. Poor child, Gwinnor thought, as she noted the dirty clothes he was wearing. His hair was unkempt and matted. She climbed up onto the boulder. Let me see your leg. He flinched when she pulled his ragged breeches up to his knee. The gash on his shin was bleeding so much it was hard to see how big it was. I need to wash this off a bit. She set her canvas bag on a dry section of the boulder, then scooped up some water in her hands to rinse off his leg. With a groan, he shuddered. It's not that bad, she assured him. How lucky that she had some of the Verna plant with her. The leaves would keep the wound from getting infected. She pulled out some of the leaves then, using a small rock, ground them on the boulder, and added some water till she had a green paste. She smeared it onto the wound, then used her shears to cut a strip of white linen from the hem of her shift. She wrapped it around the treated wound and tied off the ends. There. She patted the boy on the shoulder. You'll be fine. Do you live close to here? Do you need help getting home? A series of shouts drew her attention, and she glanced up at the ridge. There were a dozen men there yelling at her and shaking their spears. More shouts came from the other bank, and she gasped when she saw a dozen more men. No, not men. They were close enough that she could get a good look at them. They were short, dressed in dirty clothes, with long hair and beards. The language they were yelling was not Norveshki, and they all had spears pointed at her. The boy she had just treated yelled back at them, his voice deep and guttural. With a gasp, Gwinnor jumped back, falling off the boulder and landing knee-deep in the frigid water. He wasn't a boy. With his face now visible, she saw he had the beginnings of a beard. His nose was large and bulbous. Her blood ran cold. Mountain trolls were real, and these were ready to attack. Chapter 16. Gwinnor stumbled back, her gaze darting from one side of the stream to the other. Goddesses help her! The trolls looked every bit as frightening as the illustrations in Tarushki's bedtime tales of a mountain troll. But this wasn't a nightmare. She was awake and they were real. Their spears were definitely real. The injured troll on the boulder was telling the others something and motioning to his leg.
Yes, I'm a healer,
Gwenor called out in Noveshki, hoping they would understand.
I mean you no harm.
The trolls started jabbering to one another, but she couldn't tell if they were excited or angry. She backed away slowly, ignoring how much her feet were burning from the icy water. One of them on the ridge noticed her sneaking away, and with a shout, he pointed his spear at her. Another on the opposite bank lunged toward her. Goddesses protect me. Gwenor lifted her skirts and ran, splashing through the stream toward the lake.
There is no need to fear, one of the kings of the forest said softly.
She scoffed. Easy for the kings to say. They were practically indestructible. The water grew deeper up to her thighs, then her hips. In desperation, she ripped away any remaining shield around her mind and envisioned herself mentally screaming.
Puff! Can you hear me? I'm in trouble!
A spear shot past her, bouncing off a boulder.
Puff, they're attacking me! Help me!
Where are you? His voice sifted into her mind, and she almost wept from relief. He'd heard her. Puff was there for her.
I'm north of the castle, close to the lake.
The stream's current knocked her off her feet, and with a squeal, she plunged into icy water that was up to her shoulders. As the current swept her along, it took all her concentration to keep her head above water and avoid being slammed into any boulders. Before she knew it, she was dumped into the lake. She treaded water as the current carried her toward the center of the lake. Thank the goddesses, she'd learned how to swim on the Isle of Moon. And she no longer had to worry about crashing into any rocks. Glancing around, she spotted the trolls. They had followed her to the lake and were shouting at her, gesturing for her to swim ashore. Were they hoping to take her captive? She couldn't let that happen. But the freezing cold was seeping into her bones. If any of her muscles cramped, she could drown.
Puff!
I'm coming. Her heart squeezed at the sound of his sweet voice. He would save her again. Goddesses help her. If he wasn't a different species, she would date him.
Have you reached the lake?
He asked.
I'm in the lake.
What?
Damn it, Gwen, get out. It's dangerous.
I can't, she replied.
The trolls will attack me.
I'm almost there. Don't get caught in the current. A little late for that, she thought, as the current swept her slowly south. If she just stayed afloat, she would eventually make it all the way to the village of Dreshka. With a gasp, she recalled the waterfall. She was slowly moving toward it, and the current was getting stronger. Holy goddesses, she could either plummet to her death or be captured by the trolls. Panic threatened to overwhelm her, but she channeled the frantic feelings into a burst of energy, swimming hard for the shore. The trolls pranced about, shaking their spears.
Puff, where are you?
A burst of fire shot from the sky, hitting the shoreline and forcing the trolls to retreat.
Puff!
She spotted him, coming from the north and flying straight for her. Good goddesses, he was magnificent. Smoke curled up from his mouth, and his scales shimmered green and purple in the sunlight. He had to be the most incredible creature on all of Irthlan. And he was coming for her. His wings folded in as he dove downward. His forelegs hit the water, skimming along the surface. Then he scooped her up as easily as if she were a kitten. She flung her arms around one of his legs, squeezing him tight. I have you. His great wings batted the air, lifting him slowly as he continued to fly south. Just as he rose above the lake, she glanced down and saw the water cascading over the falls. Oh, dear goddesses, she'd come too close to dying. But she was safe now, thanks to Puff. Tears burned her eyes and a shudder racked her body.
He curled up his forelegs, cradling her against his chest.
Are you all right?
Yes, she shivered. No, I'm freezing, and I was so afraid. A sob escaped, and she burrowed her face against his soft, leathery skin. You saved me, again. You're the best dragon in the whole world.
He held her tighter against him. I was afraid, too.
Oh, Puff.
She pressed a hand against his chest.
I missed you. It seems like ages since I last saw you.
It hasn't been that long. And you had others to keep you company. Like the General.
He doesn't come dashing to the rescue like you. You've saved me twice now.
One of Puff's claws flinched. Then you prefer me?
He angled his head downward, his golden eyes gleaming as he looked at her.
I heard you wanted to date me.
What? She stuttered. Who told you that? The General? The man is always joking. You can't take anything he says seriously.
A huffing sound emerged from Puff's nostrils as he shifted his gaze forward. So you ignore what the General tells you? Didn't he warn you about the dangers of the forest? Gwynor winced. While it was true that she'd made a mistake, wandering off on her own, she still felt that Silas shared part of the blame.
I wouldn't have gone if I'd known the trolls were real. Silas should have told me.
But he warned you about the bears, wolves, and wildcats, didn't he?
I don't want to talk about him, she grumbled. He's always neglecting to tell me important things.
Another huff from Puff. Maybe he's trying to protect you.
Why are you defending him?
She smoothed a hand across the soft leather of Puff's chest.
No one protects me as well as you.
His claws tightened, then relaxed. Then it's true. You want to date me.
Well,
she winced. How could she let this beautiful dragon down gently?
I am very fond of you, but...
Have you heard of the rules for dating a dragon? When I take you for a ride...
Hold on tight, and don't let go, she finished for him.
And the second rule is about your extra-large heart. She sighed. I would never want to hurt you, Puff. Not when you're sweet enough to come to my rescue. Then you should know the third rule, he said softly in her mind. Whenever you need me, you only have to call and I will come. Dear goddesses, he made her heart ache. What a shame that he was a different species. For he was so much sweeter than that rascal Silas.
Puff's claws flinched once again. Ouch!
Sorry. He paused for a moment, then continued. I have to admit to some anger that you ventured away from the castle by yourself. Why did you?
I wanted to meet the kings of the forest, and I did. They're truly magnificent.
She patted his chest.
Almost as magnificent as you.
Another huff. The General will be upset, too.
No doubt Silas would want to fuss at her, but she was annoyed with him, too. You can communicate with him, right?
Yes.
Good. Then tell him I don't want to talk to him. After all, whenever I'm in trouble, you're the one who saves me, not him.
Puff's grip tightened as another huff escaped his nostrils. We're at the castle now. I'll tell the Colonel that you have arrived. He zoomed down and dropped her with a thud on the lawn close to the southern gate.
Oof! Had he done that because he was angry?
Gwynor sat up and saw him flying around the castle, headed back north.
Puff, when will I see you again?
Why do you ask? Are we dating?
She scrambled to her feet. I haven't thanked you properly.
Thank the General. He's the one who sent me.
Silas had sent Puff. Gwynor pondered that as she watched the dragon disappear from view. If Silas had been communicating with Puff, why had she heard only Puff's voice in her mind? That reminded her that her mind was still open, so she quickly erected a mental shield. A cool breeze wafted against her wet clothes, causing her to shiver. She needed to warm up quickly or she'd catch a cold. As she hurried through the gate, she realized she'd left her canvas bag behind at the river. Blast. She'd have to do all that work in the garden again. This day was not going well, and it wasn't going to get any better if Silas was intending to give her an earful. Damn it, I'll wring her neck! Silas strode down the hallway on the ground floor of the northern wing. He'd just returned to the castle through the northwestern tower, where Dimitri had met him. Not so loud, Dimitri grumbled. Everyone in the castle is eager for more gossip about your turbulent love affair with Lady Gwynor. Silas took a deep breath to calm his anger. Did you send Margosha to her? Yes. Dimitri opened the door to Carlin's office. We can talk in here. Silas glanced around as he entered. Where is Carlin? I asked him and a few of his most trusted guards to help me keep an eye on Romac and the priest. We're taking turns, so they won't realize they're being watched. Where is Romac? In the king's outer office, going about business as usual. Dimitri rolled up a sleeve to show a few wet leaves plastered against his forearm. Lady Gwynor sent these earlier. He peeled off the leaves to show a red, inflamed patch of skin. What is that? Silas asked. It was caused by poison. Lady Gwynor has a similar spot on her arm. What? Silas's heart lurched. She's been poisoned? Dimitri snorted. I was too, but I can see where all your concern lies. Silas gave him a wry look. You're obviously still alive. Where did the poison come from? The dagger that Romac had me pass on to Gwynor. Silas's heart grew still for a moment. The weasel wants me dead. Dimitri nodded. I figure he wants rid of both you and Lady Gwynor. If she stabbed you with the poisoned dagger, it would kill you, and then she would be executed. Bastard! Silas clenched his fists. How dare he abuse her like that? If she had accidentally cut herself, she could have died. Dimitri cleared his throat. Me too? Yes. Silas paced about the room. So Romac didn't receive that gold just for spying. He was being paid to assassinate me. Say the word and I'll arrest him. Silas paced some more as he considered. Where is the priest? In the village at a tavern. Probably waiting for news of my death. Silas stopped. As soon as Alexei returns, spread the word in the village that I'm deathly ill and not expected to live. When the priest leaves, have Alexei follow him. I want to know where he goes and who is behind all this. I thought you suspected Lord Morris. I do, but I need to be sure. Once the priest is gone, we arrest Romac. Dimitri nodded. Got it. Silas glanced at his friend's inflamed arm. Did the poison make you sick? Now you ask, Dimitri smirked. My head hurt like hell. So did that mean Gwynor had a headache too? Silas grimaced. She should never have wandered off like that. But I'm feeling much better now, thank you. Dimitri smiled when Silas gave him an affectionate swat on the shoulder. I suggest you refrain from wringing her neck. After all, she's the one who figured out that the dagger was poisoned. We need her. I know. She's wonderfully clever. Silas thumped a fist on Carlin's desk. That just makes me more upset with her. How could she do something so foolish? Calm down. She's fine. No harm done. She almost went over the waterfall. And if I have to hear one more time about how sweet that damned Puff is...
What? Puff?
The dragon, Silas growled. She keeps going on and on about how he always comes to the rescue while I do nothing. It's Puff who protects her, not me. It's Puff that's a sweetheart.
By the light, Dimitri laughed. Do you hear what you're saying?
It's what she's saying that's pissing me off. Dimitri punched him on the shoulder.
Idiot, you're jealous of yourself.
Silas hissed in a breath, then shot his friend a warning glare. Don't say it. We can never let her find out.
If she's as clever as you think, she'll figure...
No. Silas shook his head. She wants to go back to her family in a month. If she finds out, we won't be able to let her leave. Dimitri gave him a sympathetic look.
Then you have no choice. You have to let her think Puff is the hero.
Silas sighed. The true nature of the dragons was Noveshka's most guarded secret. No foreigner was ever allowed to know the truth.
And you should keep your distance from her, Dimitri added. Any woman who gets involved with us could be affected by the curse.
I don't believe in the curse.
Fine, but even without the curse you could hurt her. So be careful.
Silas winced. He knew deep down he shouldn't get involved with Gwenor. Not when her greatest desire was to return to her adopted family in Eberron. But how could he stay away from her when he was working with her? He had to be by her side. Or was he just using that as an excuse? With a silent groan, he realized the truth. He didn't want to stay away. He enjoyed being with her. She made him laugh, she made him lust, she made him want more and more of her. But to what end? She'd already asked him that. If he had any honor, he would stop lusting for her, stop trying to pull her into a relationship that had no future. I need to warn her not to wander off by herself. After that, I'll stay away. Dimitri gave him a wry look as if he doubted Silas would heed his own words. As Silas left the northern wing and crossed the courtyard, he wondered if he was capable of staying away from Gwenor. He'd been so terrified earlier that she would come to harm or die. By the light, he had to be suffering from more than a bad case of lust. He wanted to grab onto her and not let go, and it was so damned tempting to do that when he knew from overhearing her thoughts that she was also attracted to him. Whenever their eyes met, he could feel the pull between them, the yearning. It was so strong, it felt like a cord had connected them, and it was slowly being reeled in. But she was going home in a month. If he truly cared about her, he needed to cut the cord. He shouldn't send her home with a broken heart. His hands curled into fists. What about his heart? She'd nearly killed him when she'd put herself in danger. And then she trampled all over his traumatized heart by declaring Puff the real hero. She'd called the general a jokester, a man who wasn't to be taken seriously. Damn it to hell. How could she dismiss him like that? Was that any way to treat a man she was attracted to? He strode into the southern wing, then darted up the stairs two at a time, headed for her bedchamber. She was going to take him seriously. Now. Gwenor settled on a pillow in front of the hearth to let the heat from the fire dry her long, wet hair. After a hot bath, she was feeling much better. Margosha had taken away her sodden clothes with a promise to return later with some hot tea and soup. Now she was dressed in a clean shift and trying to relax, but it was difficult to do when she knew Silas was going to fuss at her. "Stop worrying about him," she told herself. It didn't matter what he thought, not when she was leaving in a month.
and there was no point in wanting a relationship with him. No one else would ever accept her here, so it was better to keep her thoughts private and never let him know how much she had fallen for him. She carefully reconstructed her mental shield once again, placing each imaginary brick into place until she had a sturdy wall that Silas could never penetrate. A knock sounded at the door. Probably Margosha. Gwenor rose to her feet, suddenly realizing how hungry she was. "Come in." The door swung open and Silas strode inside. She gasped. "What?" He halted with a jerk, his eyes widening. She grabbed the pillow off the floor to hold in front of her. Good goddesses, she was wearing nothing but a thin shift. "You can't come in now." His jaw shifted. "I have a few things to say to you." He reached back and slammed the door shut. He wasn't leaving. "I'm not properly dressed," I noticed. He strode toward her. She stepped back. "You need to go, now." He stopped a few feet away from her. "I see you're taking me seriously now."
"What?"
"For your information, I was the one who sent the dragon to you. He didn't want to go, but I insisted. I knew he could get to you faster than I could."
"Oh, all right."
Why was Silas making a big deal over who did the rescuing? Gwenor looked him over. He was as handsome as ever, dressed in full uniform with brown linen breeches, green shirt, and his leather breastplate. His hair was disheveled, though, as if he'd dressed in a hurry, and his green eyes were glittering with emotion. She hugged the pillow, making sure it covered her breasts and private parts. "Then before you go, I would like to thank you." "You're welcome." When he didn't budge, she motioned toward the door with a pointed look. He frowned at her. "I heard the dragon told you that he would always come if you called him."
"Yes, it's rule number 3 for dating a dra-"
"What you need to know is that the same rule applies to me. You can always count on me." Silas thumped his chest, drawing her attention to his leather breastplate. Her eyes narrowed on the 4 stars. The one on the left was tarnished, green, just like the one she'd seen in the small cabin in the clearing. Were these the same clothes? Why had Silas dressed there? And how did he know what she and Puff had talked about?
"Did you listen in on my conversation with Puff?"
"Of course I could hear you. Your shield was down."
"I didn't hear you," she muttered.
Or had she? Silas's voice was similar to Puff's, although it was hard to distinguish the two, since she'd heard Silas's voice with her ears and Puff's voice in her mind, and Puff was usually speaking kindly to her with a soft voice, while Silas was either fussing at her or joking. Scowling at her, he shifted his weight. "I told you how dangerous the forest could be, but you failed to heed my warning." She lifted her chin.
"You failed to tell me about the trolls."
He scoffed.
"Telling you about bears, wolves, and wildcats wasn't enough. Warning you that children get lost in the..."
"I was never lost. I knew exactly how to get back, and I'm not a child." His gaze drifted down to the pillow, then back to her face, his eyes blazing with a fierce intensity. "You shouldn't have gone off by yourself." She winced inwardly. That much was true. Although she hadn't thought there would be any wild animals close to the castle. She'd assumed there were game wardens who kept the area surrounding the castle free from any danger. It was that way at the palaces where Luciana and Brigitte lived.
"I would have asked you to accompany me, but you weren't here. Where did you go?"
He shrugged.
"Official business."
"Meaning you won't tell me, just like you didn't tell me about the trolls."
They're harmless. They were chasing me. One of them threw a spear at me. They're excellent hunters. If he'd wanted to hit you, he would have. She huffed.